right there before your eyes. Let you live this life around. You got a big journey. I'm a busy man. That's all right, do what you want to do. I'm set my feet and I leave it all up to you.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 19th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, at which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of our website. And also please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our scripture reading. We were reading in the book of Hebrews, and I believe we're in the second chapter here. Yep, Hebrews chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby. Hebrews chapter 2.
Chapter 2. Therefore, we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. For if the word spoken by angels was steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just recompense of reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Lord, and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him, God also bearing them witness, both with signs and wonders, and with divers miracles and gifts of the Holy Ghost, according to his own will. For unto the angels hath he not put in subjection the world to come, whereof we speak. But one in a certain place testified, saying, What is man that thou art mindful of him, or the son of man that thou visitest him? Thou madest him a little lower than the angels, Thou crownedst him with glory and honor, and didst set him over the works of thy hands. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him. But we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he by the grace of God should taste death for every man. For it became him, for whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For both he that sanctifieth and they who are sanctified are all of one. For which cause he is not ashamed to call them brethren, saying, I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the church will I sing praise unto thee. And again, I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also himself likewise took part of the same, that through death he might destroy him that had the power of death, that is, the devil, and deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage. For verily he took not on him the nature of angels, but he took on him the seed of Abraham. Wherefore, in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
We have some questions, John. I'll pull them up here in a sec.
And by the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue? I have one person in there right now.
The first question, I guess it's only one we have. Are any other countries in America censoring public participation at their commissions, councils, and boards in violation of state law? I assume he means counties, not countries.
Right. Any counties in America, what?
They're censoring the public participation at their commissions and so on. Like some of them, they won't let people talk at them in councils and boards in violation of some of their state laws.
Yeah, censoring them isn't the way to deal with the problem, though. Removing them from office is the way to deal with the problem. And that's one of the things we do teach. These people need to be brought under the control, back under the control of the people, or be removed. Their seats become vacated, and anybody could take that vacated seat until the end of that term. So all that is possible, and that's the only way. I mean, hopefully we can convince these people. As you know, when you go to your first school meeting, you know, education, and you want to, you know, discuss with the school, with the board of education for a particular district, and you discuss the problems and you want them to fix it, and they refuse, and then you remove them with a quo warranto from their seats and replace them. Anybody can seize those seats, I understand. I have not personally seen that, but Gerard is familiar with that. I should try to find that, code or law or whatever you want to call it. But in any event, once you remove these people in one place, and, believe me, the rest of the school boards throughout the county are going to hear about this. And when you go visit them, those people who want to keep their job, they're going to start listening now. And if you got to take them out again, you take them out again. And county to county to county to county throughout the state, that's what needs to be done. But within each county, there's numerous school districts. And, of course, different levels. You got the grammar school, you got the high school, you got the colleges and universities. So there's many schools. Okay, and that's the only question?
That's the only question I have, John.
Okay. All right, I guess anybody wants to get into the queue, queue's open. I still have a bad, I don't even know what it is anymore. Virus, I guess. So it's a little problematic for me, but I'll do my best to get through the night here. Okay, I see first individual up there. Let's see if we can get him open. Is Brett. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Brett.
How you doing, John?
Good.
Yeah, so I'm still working on... I didn't get a chance to move that in federal court today because by the time I got there and I was reading through the paperwork, I printed it so fast without the change. There was a change in the wherefore clause. So when I looked at it, it didn't look right. I took out some of the language that you had mentioned, but then there was like the end of the sentence that it didn't fit right, and I forgot to delete that. So now I'm at the point where I'm kind of, well, I'm worried about it.
Well, you know, again, you do what you think you got to do. I certainly, my thinking is not to bring the child in. You need to go, and if they ask where that child is, well, you know, if she's at home, I'm here, I'm representing her, I'm a father. And did they order you directly that you must bring the child?
They said if you have an attorney represent you, they must call and let them know. Otherwise, if not, then it says you must appear.
You.
Yeah.
You. Yeah, well, then you appear. Don't bring your child. If it doesn't say specifically you must bring your child, I wouldn't bring her. And, you know, look, if they're going to push this off month after month after month, probably. I mean, it's been going on for a long time now anyway, and I've been involved in a lot of traffic problems, especially in the beginning, and it would go month after month after month, keep going back and keep going challenging and arguing and then, you know, coming back again. You know, again, if we don't know what to do, that's what's going to happen until one of us wears out, and it'll probably be us. So, again, you only have one choice, and that's to move it to federal court for cause, have a cease and desist order put down. They cannot command you to bring your child into a court. They cannot do it.
So even though it's addressed to my child, my child's name on it, and it's saying you, like they are speaking to them.
Well, that's okay. Well, as far as you're concerned, you're speaking to either the lawyer or the child, and certainly the child's not going to come by itself. Therefore, I'm going to be the lawyer for my child. I'm here, and I want to make sure that this is a common law process and procedure, which proceeds according to the common law, in other words, common sense, and no codes allowed. But in any event, it's so silly. This thing is really silly, but there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance of action.
Okay, so even though... tomorrow the hearing is in the evening. Would I still be able to go forward with moving it, say, tomorrow morning? Or is it too late?
Not at all. No, you can move it anytime you want. You can move it after tomorrow. But, yeah, definitely. Do all your paperwork tomorrow. You file it with the federal court tomorrow. If you have to do it by mail, fine. And then file it in the court itself, you know, where you're going to, that you're moving for federal court for cause, and bring two copies so you can have the clerk stamp one copy, okay? And if the clerk refuses to take it, because they will try to do that, okay? What you might want to do is go see the sheriff and pay the sheriff the $40 or whatever he wants to serve it onto the town clerk or the village clerk, whatever it is, and the court clerk.
So that was another question. It gets served on filing it with the clerk that the originating court or with the federal clerk?
Oh, no. You got to serve it in the court you're at. Okay, so you bring it to the clerk and have quite a few copies because you're going to want to give one to the prosecutor. Is there a prosecutor there or just a cop?
Yeah, Yeah, there's a village attorney.
Right. Well, have a copy for him. If you can get it to beforehand, fine, but it doesn't matter. And make sure you have one for the judge, because the clerk will get it and still won't give it to the judge. They try to stay away from that. You know, they got these good doorkeepers. And even though it's against the law, they don't care. Who's going to put them in jail? They control them all. And that's the problem. But, you know, like I said, have enough copies, because when you get to the judge, even if you leave one at the clerk, with the clerk, he probably is not going to have it anyway. And say, well, I got an extra copy here for you. I can give you some time to read it. But, you know, I'm not participating with this. I'm moving this to federal court for cause. There's the paper being served. And you can let them know. I sent it out to the federal court. You know, we'll work it there in the federal court.
So if I mail it to federal court, are they supposed to mail me when the hearing is, or?
Well, no, you always got to move things yourself. So you got to move for a hearing. First and foremost, you want to get it into the court and then file a paper for hearing. You should find something on our course there, you know, and probably under motions and in that area there.
Okay, and motions to get a hearing. Okay, and now with the defendant,
and you argue nothing but the fact that they are they cannot give you due process because they are not a court of record. That's your argument.
That they cannot give me due process because they're not a court of record.
That's right.
Would I be saying that verbatim, or just let the paperwork speak for itself and remain?
You can have to talk and just say, you know, that's what you're there for. It's a simple case. You know, they don't have jurisdiction over me. They're denying me my due process because they're incapable of giving me due process. And remember, anytime you use codes and statutes, codes and statutes do not permit due process. They're hardcore, you know, stands. That's it. This is what it says. There's no due process there. So the whole system is without due process. But the courts. The other thing is go look up on that court. You should be able to do it just within your state. It's a village court, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Just go Google to see what they say the jurisdiction of a village court is within your state there. And if necessary, your county, but you should be able to do it just within the state. And you should be able to find, you know, the fact that there's nothing there listed about you.
Okay, because I, again, I when I filed and I checked to see if that the case was on record, I couldn't find the case at all.
On record where?
Where it shows... court records, like people would do like a background check, like landlords would do, they would check to see if there's any open cases on people in general.
So how did you check? Did you go down to the clerk to check it, as far as the clerk of that court, or how did you check it?
I checked it online.
Yeah, I don't know that they would record village and town courts online. State courts, of course, and again, you have to get into the court system, you know, to see what's on the docket.
Okay.
I doubt you find anything on that with village and towns. I'd be very surprised if you did.
Now, for the defendants, would I be putting the village court there, or would I be putting the names of, like, the judge, the prosecutor, and the law enforcement officer who started this?
Yeah, do you have the prosecutor's name?
I have the prosecutor's name, the judge's name, finally, that they just sent me with this order to appear, the clerk of court who I sent the information to, and the law enforcement officer who started this whole thing.
Yeah, name them all. The judge, the prosecutor, and the police officer. And name all of them.
Okay. And leave the village court?
File a challenge of jurisdiction?
I'm sorry?
Did you file a challenge of jurisdiction before?
I did, with a notice, motion to show cause, and then the verified show cause, denial of jurisdiction, and then I sent them the affidavit of default because I didn't hear anything back. They just continued to move it.
Yeah, that's okay, but when you get there tomorrow, you're to go tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow evening, yes.
Yeah. When you go tomorrow, you bring all those things up and say, look, I filed some papers. Nobody responded to them. I don't understand why. I filed the challenge in jurisdiction. I served a copy on the prosecutor. They didn't respond. I filed a default. You didn't respond, and you people just keep on coming and coming. You're telling my daughter to come. She's a minor. She is not going to come here. I'm here to represent her for at this point in time, but I'm moving this to federal court, and that's where we're going to be now at this point.
I see.
You don't have much more words than that. You can ask the judge what jurisdiction you're in. You know, when they served that paper, did they put any code or some kind of a violation on it? What did they write on it?
Yeah, they put destruction of property.
Okay, destruction of property, but did they have no code? They didn't have any code or anything, right?
No, just the ordinance of destruction of property.
An ordinance, okay, so
yeah.
There's a code of some type. An ordinance is some kind of a statute code or something, you know, it's something. You need to look up again. Well, again, you don't respond or you don't, you don't have to respond to codes and I wouldn't get into that conversation with them directly, to be honest with you, because, again, nothing worse than ignorance and action. So you're just moving it to federal court, of course, because you don't have jurisdiction. I challenge jurisdiction. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be proven. You probably had that particular Supreme Court ruling in there. And you might want to make a note of that, what the name of that case is, and let it be known. Once jurisdiction is challenged, it's got to be proven. And the court seems to have ignored it.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it was repetitive, those cases about jurisdiction. And but on the citation, it just said parents wanted restitution. I had no idea who the parents are to even work this out outside of court. And
well, that's the other thing you can say. Look, this does not belong here before you people, okay? It just does not belong here, period, okay? If these people want some kind of restitution and they think that my daughter is responsible for breaking the phone, I'm reasonable. I'll work something out with them, okay? But we're certainly not going to come into a court to deal with this. It's ridiculous. And that's what I would tell them. If the parents are so frightened to come up to see you, have them have their lawyer come up and see you and work out the deal. You know, that's what I would say.
Right. So they just
Be very polite, not argumentative. You know, just be polite.
Because it was weird. They wanted me to. Wanted me to pay the fine plus bring in my child. So I.
You don't pay no fine, Callum. You know, no, that's why you're moving to the federal court. You're done. And once that happens, if they don't settle with you before you get to federal court, which is a possibility, you might want to settle with them. But if they don't settle with you before, and you can let the judge know, if you don't get settled, then you're never going to settle with me because I'm going to get an order for a cease and desist for this court because you don't have jurisdiction over me. You haven't proven jurisdiction. I denied jurisdiction. You didn't prove it. I filed a letter of default, paper of default, a motion. Well, I filed a default on the jurisdictional challenge. And this case, as far as I'm concerned, is over. But the court seems to want to continue onward, and they just want to ignore the papers that I file in here. So I have no other choice but to move this federal court, of course.
Okay, so all the paperwork that I'm taking in, or when I go in, get it stamped right there from their clerk.
Right. And if they won't take it, well, yeah, I wouldn't worry about it if they don't take it. If they don't take it, then you bring it with you anyway to court, give it to the judge, say the clerk refused to take it, which, by the way, is against the law. And I'd find the code. There's plenty of codes that we have written on, for instance, file on demand papers, you'll find, and you'll find some codes requiring that clerks must receive and take papers. They can't reject them. They can't deny them. It's against the law. 2 years in jail is a crime.
Wow.
You can make the point, not that I'm pushing that issue, but that's the facts. You know, to read, as a matter of fact, you don't have to say it to them. You just read it and read the penalty, you know. And at the end of reading the penalty, you can say, not that I'm pushing the point, but this has got to stop. You know, easy people are going to, you know, communicate with me. I'm sending papers. You're not responding. Nobody's responding. The attorney isn't responding. The cop isn't responding. The court isn't responding. Nobody's responding. And you keep just railroading this whole process straight on through.
Can they hold me in contempt of court for reading the paper or stop me from reading? Or do you think?
Well, look, they may... Nothing more dangerous than ignorance and inaction, okay? I have sort of a sense, you know, and I think it's really common sense. I think most people have this sense. If you watch what's going on in the court and watch the judge and the attitude, and you're very careful, you're very polite, if you're going to, you probably will sense the fact that he's just getting pissed off and he's not going to deal with you no more and he's going to fine you in contempt maybe. You know, that fear might be there. If you feel that fear, then you just be very careful with it. But again, look, you're not saying anything but reading law. You're reading the real law. You're reading it out to them. Once jurisdiction is challenged, you know, it must be decided. When I file a paper in the court and the clerk rejects it, well, this is what the law says, and you read the code out. It'll say, the codes and the laws and the Supreme Court will speak for you. You don't have to speak anything of your own words. You know, you just tie everything together with your words, but just read the papers, that, you know, read the code or the Supreme Court ruling. That's all. And again, always be very polite and nice and reasonable and so on. And at the end, I would tell her, look, nobody in this court is being reasonable. You know, by the way, I'm just thinking about this. I didn't think about this before. Did they mention this was a small claims court or something like that?
No, it's not a small claims court. It's very vague. It's like a few sentences, you know. It's destruction of property. The citation, when it first came in the mail, it said parents demand restitution. Your child must appear. And so that was the citation. And then they sent another letter saying that there's a pretrial hearing by phone to call the village prosecutor, which I did, and there was no answer, and I left a message. They didn't respond, and by that time I had already submitted the jurisdiction before they.
But they still haven't responded to your pretrial, pretrial meeting, right?
Right. So it went citation, and then I filed the jurisdictional challenge with them. Then they sent me a letter of a pretrial, and then I reached out to the.
And they didn't respond. They didn't answer. They didn't return your call. They didn't respond.
Nope. So I filed an affidavit of default.
Okay, and they still haven't responded.
No, they just responded. They sent another letter last week saying now they told me who the judge is and that I must appear.
Right. Okay, well, again, that's another point you can make to the judge. Look, there's supposed to be a pretrial hearing. What are we doing here? We didn't have no pretrial hearing. I tried to get a hold of this clown. I wouldn't call him a clown. I tried to get a hold of this guy. Well, maybe I would, but anyway, I tried to get a hold of this guy, and no response, you know. You know, when I talk to lawyers in court from this point, you know, and I've done it the last couple of times I went to court, and, you know, they're very nasty, very, very nasty. And I pull that nasty stuff right back to them. But my nastiness is the truth, you know what I mean? And that digs in. But of course, you got to be careful, and you definitely don't want to talk to a prosecutor that way, and you definitely don't want to talk to a judge that way. But only if you were battling in a court case with a lawyer on the other side. If they pulled a lot of nasty stuff, then you can get away with saying certain things. But it would always be the truth, whatever I would have to say anyway. Anyway, going back, you got a lot of points here. Number one, you filed for a jurisdictional challenge. No one said anything. Number two, you don't know yet, but tomorrow you're going to find this out. And it probably is going to be the case they're going to reject it. I tried to file the papers here, for moving to federal court for cause, and the clerk rejected them. And you should have a file on demand written off, too. And then you put the file on demand back on the paper and then pass it back to the clerk again. Say, now, file this on demand. And if they push it back again, okay, well, then that's fine. You go home. But the thing is, you want to make notes what you're going to say, okay? And you're going to say about this point and this point and have different points. And one of the points you're going to want to come up with is the fact that, I filed the papers, no response. Okay, I challenged jurisdiction, no response. Papers were denied when I tried to file the movement to federal court for cause. The law says, and read the code, 2 years in jail, so much dollars in fines, whatever it is. And then I would end that with, not that I'm pushing for that, but that is the law, Your Honor. And then anything else that you have listed there, denial, you asked for the jurisdiction. They didn't give you the jurisdiction. You challenged the jurisdiction. They didn't respond to that. But make all your notes, and it sounds like you got about 4 points you want to make, and you may not make it the way you intend to make it. You may be able to make 1 point here, and then 1 point there, and 1 point there. So, but you should have your 4 points or whatever it is written on a piece of paper, backed up by law.
Okay. Now my wherefore clause, it says plaintiff moves this court for an order with prejudice commanding defendants to cease and desist and restore the plaintiff to their original state. And then it says for violating plaintiff's unalienable right of due process secured by the Bill of Rights. Defendant,
okay. Do you have any losses? Did you spend any money or anything?
For the paperwork and the travel time
See, I don't know whether it's worth your while trying to sue them. I mean, look, if they're denying you due process, you can add more on to that, and But I if I were you, I would just look to just shut the case down and let it be.
So in what I read so far, where should I end it? Wherefore, a plaintiff moves this court for an order with prejudice, commanded defendants to cease and desist, and restore the plaintiff to their original state?
You wouldn't have to go with restoring, because there's nothing really to restore.
Okay, so cease and desist, that's where it should end. Right. That's where I noticed where there was an error in the paperwork before I had it notarized.
That's where you end, right there. Yeah, there's nothing to restore, so you leave that out. You're just looking for them to cease and desist, leave you alone. And look, if the subject matter actually gets discussed in the court, in the federal court, your response to the judge then would be twofold. You would say, look, I'm going to answer that question because they said that. I have tried every way I can to work out a deal, but I'm not bringing my daughter into a courtroom to get stressed out to go through this whole process of my child. Okay, over this silly little thing between two kids at school. Okay, if the parents think I owe them something, then let's talk about it, and I'll pay restitution. They already know that. The court already knows that. Nobody wants to respond to that. But with that said, we're not here to discuss that, Your Honor. They don't have jurisdiction. That's what we're here to discuss. They denied me due process, and I'm not even looking for damages for that. I just want this to stop. That's all I want. And that's how I would deal with it.
But politely, correct?
Oh, absolutely, politely, yeah. So you want them to cease and desist because they don't have jurisdiction. They cannot give you due process. when they're coming out after you with some kind of a code against your child, but that's not, this is a schoolyard, you know, problem. This really should have been dealt with by the principal, calling the parents in. That's what it really should have been dealt with.
Which I asked for many times.
Yeah, and you can make mention to that if you feel necessary to make that mention. Definitely make mention to the court you're going to tomorrow. But in the federal court, if they push, if they allow that other side to discuss the merits of the case, and they allow that to go forward, then you might want to bring those points up. But you do want to make that case. Look, at we're not here to discuss those items. You know, we're here for federal court for cause, and the cause we're here for is the denial of due process and lack of jurisdiction, because they have lack of jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over my, over the, they don't have, I probably don't even have subject matter jurisdiction or personam jurisdiction, okay? But they don't have jurisdiction over you, and that's the only thing we should be discussing here. But nevertheless, I'll give my side of the story if you want to hear it, or maybe give it to them and then say that, that really we're here for this point, and that's where we want them to cease and desist, or prove that they have jurisdiction. They have to prove jurisdiction in that federal court then. They're not going to be able to do it.
Huh. So then with the in the move,
I'll tell you what, they probably won't even show up to the court, because when they look at that, when they look at your paperwork, they may say, well, look, this isn't worth pushing any further. And you know, judges in small towns and lawyers, or prosecutors in the small towns and the villages and stuff, they don't like going into federal court. They feel really outside of their element. And I've seen that the judges don't treat them too well either, even though they don't treat me that well, but they don't treat the lawyers that well either, especially the lawyers, because when the lawyers come in and they don't apply abide by the rules of the court and certain things, the judge really gets down hard on them, you know? At least that's been my experience.
So with in the instructions for the removal for cause, there's a affidavit. So would I be using that affidavit or no?
I'm sorry, I was muted. You know, make sure you have a summons, to pull them into the federal court, or moving it to federal court for cause, and putting a summons copy on top of it. And that gives them, you know, 30 days or whatever to respond. Okay. And then see what happens.
Okay. So that,
if they don't respond within 30 days, okay, then you don't even have to push a motion to have a hearing. You just file a default right there in that federal court, which may, it may be where it'll go. They may not even respond to the federal court, because they know when they look at the wherefore clause, the only danger is that the court case is going to cease to exist, and it's going to be shut down. But there's no real pain for them directly.
Okay. So do I need to use that affidavit, that affidavit sheet in there where it's saying affiant being of lawful age, qualified and competent to testify to?
And what story did you tell on that? You told the story of what took place, or what?
The story that I told was, well, on. After I got the citation, I gave the date that I sent by certified mail, and I put the number in there, the certified mail number, objecting to the procedure, and then regarding this case. And then on January 6th, I sent the certified mail numbers for the show cause. And then on April 21st, I sent my certified mail an affidavit of default judgment.
Well, you could bring all those papers with you to the federal court. You don't have to file it with the federal court, but you just have it with them in case you get into that discussion, which they shouldn't. But you never know, you know?
Right.
It's none of their business. That's not what you're there for. You're there because they don't have jurisdiction in the subject. There's nothing else to talk about.
Okay. I just didn't want to take more paper than I need to, and then I just wanted to take everything that I needed to be complete.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you've already filed whatever papers you did in that court, you know, the one you're going to tomorrow. You can just talk about them and lay out point by point by point by point. You guys did nothing, okay? So I don't even know what you're doing anymore. You even tell me we're going to have a pretrial meeting. I called the guy up for a pretrial meeting, left a message. They never get back to me. Here I am. There was no pretrial meeting. You know, your clerk doesn't respond properly to the law. The prosecutor doesn't respond to the law. And the court is pursuing a jurisdiction that it doesn't have. And I'm moving to federal court. I'm done here. Again, very, very polite. All right?
Okay. Wow.
All right. And, you know, you could, this will be posted tonight. You can re-listen to this again. Yeah, audio. All right?
Okay.
Okay, we'll take our next caller. Steve, looks like from Montana.
Missouri.
Missouri. All right, Missouri.
Yes. My name is Steven, and I talked with you a couple of weeks ago. I had been charged with failure to register a vehicle, and I actually have this car registered in common law court. It's international law. And so last time that I went to court, this is county court, they have you step up to the window, let them know who you are before you go into the courtroom. And the lady said, well, this is a pretrial. Do you have any papers to file? And I said, no, I left in a hurry. It's an hour and a half drive, and I was running late. And I said, but I do have papers showing that my my car is registered in international law. And she got on the phone, and I said, by the way.
How solid is that? Is that how do you get into international?
There is and I think it's listed that way. I came across it in my in some of my studies, and I put my birth certificate in there as well. But at any rate, they didn't challenge that. The lady at the desk called, and I'm sure she was talking to the assistant of the prosecuting attorney. And when I got in there, the prosecutor said to the judge, Your Honor, we're amending the charge, and so they're not charging me with failure to register my car. Now they're charging me, he says, we're amending it to failure to display license plates. Now, what my question is, how can a prosecutor who wasn't there, first of all, there was no, the police officer that wasn't there because it's a pretrial, and he decided, I suppose, because, by the way, I told them, I said, I don't have the papers with me, but I will send you copies, and it will be, I'll have them notarized. And so I told the woman that, and she called, she picked up the phone. And then when I got in, the prosecutor said, Your Honor, we're going to amend them to failure to display plates. Well,
Who gave you the ticket to begin with?
A deputy sheriff.
Okay, so a sheriff, which he shouldn't have done it, that's a code violation. Okay, so law enforcement gave you the ticket. My question would be, you know, sometimes, you know, I push things a little bit, and I don't want to tell you to push them either, but definitely you want, it depends on how you put the question, okay? But I would ask the lawyer there, are you working part-time with law enforcement now? I mean, you know, you're giving out another ticket.
Right.
I didn't get that.
Right.
What you're talking about. Okay, that's one
right.
point I want to make. Okay, the other point, and the more important than that, because they're not looking into it because they're ignorant, this is a town court probably, right?
It's a county. It's a real small. There's real small county. Morgan County.
In other states, county courts actually handle this stuff. I am beside. In New York, they don't handle this stuff because they know it's in the town courts. It's in the village courts. You know, but in any event, you know what jurisdiction you're in. That's the key question. Number one. Number two.
Yeah.
You're going to see commercials.
I was going to. I'm sorry. I was going to ask you that because I believe in the town where the courthouse is, there's only something like 3,000 people. And I know that every state has some rules concerning population and jurisdiction as well.
Yeah, jurisdiction can vary. But the point is this. What jurisdiction are you in? Courts have many different jurisdictions. It sounds like a commercial jurisdiction. In other words, it's a traffic violation. Okay?
That
has nothing to do with you. Challenge jurisdiction. That's number one. The other thing is, well, look, I'm very curious about this quote-unquote international registry or something. Do they provide plates, too?
No. And that's the thing. I mean, they follow pretty much the same thing that you're not required to register.
I would be very weary. You better look real deep because there's a lot of crazy people out there that create things. I'm telling you.
Well, the thing at least it did is it got it out of them charging me with failure to register the vehicle. They dropped that, which that carries in the state of Missouri. That's listed as a crime with up to 6 months in jail. So the fact that they've changed it now, I don't see how they could go back on that, and they've got me with failure to display plates.
You're thinking with common sense. That's the problem. They don't. So you don't see how trust me. They'll do whatever they want to do. I would challenge at this point. I would challenge jurisdiction. Okay, that's where I would go. But I would not play around with this international thing. This sounds fluey to me. It's weird.
Yeah. I've got a printout of it. It's called Common Law Courts, Great Britain and International.
I'm telling you, I've been around on the internet with all this stuff. I never heard about that. Also, some international courts and Anna von Rich's courts I heard about in the beginning before I even heard about her. And it's all just craziness. It's made up stuff.
I am very aware that I started out with her but some other people prior to her, but went through her and David Strait until I located you guys.
If I were you, I would go register the car. It's not worth the havoc and the hassle. It just isn't. The chances of going to jail, I mean, I register my vehicle because I just don't want the hassle. I don't want to keep waking up in jail.
Yeah.
I got so many things to do than be going to jail all the time. And that's not same thing with a driver's license, you know. If they ever brought anything up to me with a driver's license I've driven commercial before. I might want to drive commercial again, so I got a driver's license in case I want to drive commercial again. And it's also a great ID. And that's what I would tell them. I never had to say that, but I would if they brought it up. But they'll probably never bring it up.
Well, I still have my driver's license, and I did show them because he threatened me. My understanding is you don't have to show any identification unless you've committed a crime or they have articulable suspense that you're about to commit a crime.
Who doesn't have to show? I missed that part. Start all over. I was coughing. I had my mute button on.
First of all, I want to agree with you. This is caused, you have to pick your battles kind of thing. And, I've already spent way too much time, and money just driving back and forth to this place. This is, four times. It's an hour and a half each way. I think I am going to go ahead and just put plates back on it, pay whatever fine for late fees and that. But at this point,
that's the smart thing to do. That is exactly. Look, as much as I would hate to have to yield to these SOBs, it's a smart thing to do because you don't want them to flip back to the other side. You want to appease them, make them feel like they got a victory, get involved with the committees of safety and really let's take our nation back.
I do want to do that. And actually, John, I So I mentioned before, I've got your common law book, and I've gone through some of the things, some of the, started through working through some of the, your courses. I also bought a book, and I think that was through you guys, the Federalist and Anti-Federalist, papers. I have the complete works of that. But because I have bounced around so much, I wanted to ask you if there's a place that just delineates, okay, here's the first step, here's the second step. I did sign up because there was no one around here. I volunteered to be I guess that's a coordinator or something. I got a call from a lady in Kansas City. But I am studying. I try to study every day. I'm retired. I'm in good health, and I do help other people. Matter of fact, I've got somebody. This is something I wanted to ask you about. Next friend, this a lady that her husband has some frontal lobe damage, and he's just non-functional, and she can't afford to hire an attorney, and I wanted to see if you could maybe help me to help this guy with or them. They're trying to get him in a nursing home, and they don't have the money really to do it. But I read a little bit about Next Friend, and I was wondering if you have to file papers for that, or if you can just I've heard what you said about you have the right to practice law, but I've had two different judges threaten to have me taken out and that I can be thrown in jail.
Look at they're talking about civil law to begin with, and they don't even know what they're talking about, to be honest with you. But I would make the contrast between the facts of civil law and common law, and that's why all my papers have court of record that proceeds according to the common law under it, and anybody can come and practice law in our courts of justice. Maybe we can't practice in their private civil law courts that we don't participate with, nor do we wish to participate with you. They keep pulling us into them. It's a battle to stay out of them, but nevertheless, it is. You do what you got to do there. But sometimes you have to give up, and you know, especially if you don't have the knowledge. Are you in our court access in the common law course?
I haven't paid for that yet. I have your book, but I've spent so much money just over the past 6 months on buying books, law books, but before that I was spending money on the Bible study, different Bibles and Bible, because I teach Bible classes, and I've just about exhausted what I have to spend.
If you'd like to get into the course, you can fill out the application, you know, put in a money order or a check for whatever you can afford, $10, $50, whatever it is, and just write down a payment plan, you know, however you want to pay it over the course of time, and send it to us, and we'll put you right in.
Well, thank you, and God bless you. I will take you up on that, because I really, I've been studying on my own just from what I can find, UR law and some of those things, you know, and they suggest subrogation and some things, but
you need to understand the structure of due process, and you will learn it in this course, and everything's up there right now. You can spend as much time as you want. Like you say, you're retired, so you got a lot of time maybe, and you can catch up with us pretty quickly. If you put the hours.
Okay. Can I pay with a Visa card? Send you some money with a Visa card, and then start like on a monthly fee for
that
course?
What you could do is you can fax or email, form to get in, and you can go up onto our donation page and pick a number, how much you want to pay, and just make the card for that. And then on your application for the course, just note I paid $25 or whatever it was, and using the Visa card. And you'll get a number there also, it's I don't know what you would call it, sort of a purchase number. But there's a number identifies.
Okay,
payment. Right. So you can just put that on there and say, hey, look, I'll pay as I go, this or that, whatever you got to do. You know, none of us are worried about money here. We do need money to survive, but this is important stuff. People need knowledge, and we don't want to prevent that from going out because of money.
Yes. Well, I have a lot. Have several people just asking me constantly for help about things, and I'm going to stay on this. I feel like it's just one of the most important things that I could probably do with my life at this point. Not just the helping of them, but getting us back into the Republic. And a lot of people don't understand that stuff. They're just, you know, they hear. You know, that I know that takes probably precedence over some of these little minor traffic things. But, you know, it's funny, they will look to Trump thing charges up, and I've been dealing with this pretty much all my life since I was a teenager. I've seen the corruption in courts, and it's funny that through my life, any time that I went in by myself, I never once ended up paying any money or staying in jail. But anytime I hired an attorney or a lawyer, I ended up paying a bunch of money, and that seemed to be what that was all about.
That's all it is about. And let me ask you a question, though. You said you're trying to help someone to get into a nursing home, and they're disabled, you say?
Yes, he has. It's his left dorsal lateral frontal lobe.
Roughly how old?
How old it? I think he's about. He's I want to say he's in his early to mid 50s.
Okay, is he on Social Security? Did he get Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security?
You know, I'm not sure about that. I'm going to go sit in Thursday,
You can file for Social Security. You have to file for Social Security, okay, for a disability. Okay, and at the same time, you're filing for Medicare, Medicaid. Medicaid before. That you got to do, go down to social services. And then once you get Social Security, then you should be able to get the Medicare. And sometimes they try to charge you for that, but if you argue it, say, I can't afford that, they'll say, well, okay, we'll just give it to you anyway. They just try to take more money away from you. But in any event, once they're in that, you should be able to get into a nursing home or some kind of assisted living or something.
Yes, okay. Well, she wrote out several things for me. Actually, I have a paper here, the things that she was concerned about. They told her his mother, they own his mother's, but it's in his name, and he's just non-functional. And they said that she can't sell that house, that he has to sign the papers because it's in his name. But he's just, he does well to get to speak, to speak to anybody. And so they're playing games with it.
He doesn't understand what's going on.
No, he doesn't understand. You know, he's
stop, listen. Start with the Social Security stuff, okay? That's BS, whoever told you that the wife can't sell the home, because look at, they're married. And he's in a situation where now what's his is hers, okay? She shouldn't have a problem with that. I hate to tell you to go get a bar attorney for this, but, if you can have a conversation with one that'll charge you a minimum fee, maybe then you can think about it and try to work that out. Because that's a little bit of a specialty situation. Remember, the spouse is first inheritor of the estate.
Yes.
And she is responsible for him, isn't she? She signs his papers.
Has been taking, but she has a little bit, she's getting some kind of disability herself. She had an accident came crashing, and just smashed her part of her leg and her foot. So she's been taking care of him, but he's at the point where she has to lock the doors, lock him in his room at night, He's gotten in a car and driven and wrecked the car. The teenage daughter's afraid. They just don't. She doesn't even know him anymore because he's just not. He's not able to communicate with them.
Well, look.
So it's
she needs to staff social services. I don't blame this problem. Get him onto social services. They will work with him to try to get him into some place to assist. They'll help out. I don't see why they wouldn't.
Okay.
The Adult Protective Services could be very dangerous, but in this situation, I don't know that it would be. The danger with these people is wherever they escalate it to, because he does own a home. Does he own anything else more than a home? Does he have a lot of assets?
I don't think so. I think it's just they're paying a mortgage on the one that they're living in, and then his mother died, and it was left to him. And that's what the wife is trying to sell.
Okay. And, she's going to probably have to see a regular lawyer for that. I hate to say it, but, they're hard to find someone that's actually going to do the job and not spend a whole bunch of money.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. A lot of people, it's so simple. It's crazy. So...
Well, that's therein is the problem. She talked with the lawyer, and the lawyer is the one that told her that she couldn't sell it, that he had signed the papers. I guess she needs to go find a different lawyer to talk
well,
with.
Well, let me ask you a question. Is he totally incompetent, or does he have moments of clarity?
That I don't know. I don't know.
Has he... has he been registered anywhere with this problem?
He's been. In fact, this is his dad, his father, and one of his brothers had the same problem. And in fact, the wife started noticing some things a few years back, and she told the doctor that's what. And of course, they're kind of like a lot of lawyers. Nobody knows anything but them, and so. He thought it was due to some kind of an accident, and then come to find out, it's the same thing that is his father and brother, some kind of genetic thing, evidently.
I'm trying to think here. The thing is if you can get the papers drawn up to transfer the house to the wife, would he sign it?
Well, I will ask her that tomorrow.
Okay, get the papers drawn up, have her sign it. And look, as long as nobody's sticking their nose into the business and knows what's going on and what you're doing, or if there's no family that's going to cause havoc here somewhere and challenge it and say, hey, wait a second,
right.
That when he was incompetent and so on and so forth.
Uh-huh.
As long as that doesn't exist, it probably shouldn't be a problem.
Right.
And I don't see fraud or anything. Personally, I don't anyway. The thing is it definitely belongs to the husband and wife. That is what it is. You get lost in these courts, though, they'll take everything away because that's what they do.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I guess probate court is what they'd be trying to get that into, I suppose.
Right.
But I will ask her tomorrow and see if he does have some moments of clarity. That would be the thing to do, is to get him to sign the papers and get that.
Get a copy of all the papers that where the mother signed it over to her son, and now
uh-huh.
and sort of see how she did it, because it's out of my expertise. I don't understand that part of the law, and that requires some studying. And again, I know nothing about it, but. However they drew up the papers to do what they did to transfer it to him, do the same thing to transfer it to her.
And then
have to sign it and get it notarized.
Okay.
You'll have to take them to a notary. Actually, it's done with witnesses. I don't think you have to have a notary on that. It can be done with witnesses. You'll have to find out. So.
Okay.
What other family is around? Any of the children older, or they're all young, or what?
I think there's a daughter that's, I think she's 15, 17 at most, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Are there brothers?
Well, listen, John,
does the wife have brothers or sisters, or does the husband have brothers or sisters?
I don't, I don't know that about that either. This was just brought to me about a week ago.
Okay.
So, and actually, it's my fiance's. She is a she works like if DFS or Family Services called in. She works for a private company or that goes in and helps families to keep from losing their children and things like that. And so they were called in. She was called into this maybe a year or two ago, and I don't recall what that was. The issue was, but she called and recently and wanted to have some help on this. So I'll look into those things.
What I would be careful of is signing any paper, having him sign any paper where he says that I'm of my right mind or anything like that. But if you can find paperwork, if the paperwork for transferring the property was just a transfer of a piece of property with signatures, would some statement like that isn't there, then that's what I would go forward with.
Okay.
And before even trying to sell the property, she should, first of all, try to get him settled someplace where he can be taken care of. Time anyway is the point.
Yeah,
but,
that's the problem. She doesn't have the money to get put him in. I think she already talked with the nursing home about that, and so that's why she was wanting to sell the house.
She needs to be talking to social services, not the nursing home.
Okay.
Got to start. The other thing there is how much is left on the mortgage is a big key question, and the house could be used as the collateral for the nursing home.
Okay.
But don't even bring that up. Remember, it's probably under, I don't know of anybody that does it any other way. It probably was done by a lawyer to begin with, but under the Homestead Act. This way, if you're living in the house, they can't take the home away. I mean, courts can.
Right.
But generally speaking, creditors can't. They can't take the home away if it's under the Homestead Act.
Okay. Well, listen, before I end with you, just to be clear about, so I'm going to start with due process. Is that the course that I'm looking for to sign up for?
If you go, are you seeing my desktop here?
I can. I'm on the phone right now, but I do have my Chromebook outside here, and I can give me just a second. Let me get that. Put my glasses on. Okay, I'm looking at, this page says only the People Can Save America, NLA.
You see
plan.
How I'm going down here under Education Starts here, and you come down to Court Act, Common Law Course, you click on that, okay? When you click on that, you'll get the information on the course, and you'll get a form. You'll fill out the form. You can email it to me at, just mail it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and attach that to there. And just go out and give whatever you can give.
Okay. All right. Well, I really appreciate your help, and I will get right on that. And thank you for your words of wisdom here. I will I'll get a hold of her tomorrow and see what we can get done.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think a lot of your problems could be solved by social services because they'll get her onto Medicaid, and then go to Social Security and get him onto Social Security because he's disabled, and he'll get Medicare, Medicaid. He'll get everything he needs for that.
Okay.
All right, Steve. Thank you. So that's cool.
Oh, thank you, John. God bless you guys. Bye-bye.
Good. Thank you. Kathy, you got the
Hi, John. This is Kathy in Minnesota. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a couple of different questions here today. I had a hearing on Wednesday for the hearing was that they claimed I violated the fraudulent harassment restraining order back in May 2022. So that was what the hearing on Wednesday was for. Eric helped me. We didn't have time to to move it to federal court for cause, so we were just trying to halt this. So we were just planning to file challenging jurisdiction. So I had all my documents challenging jurisdiction, and I went down to the courts. My hearing was at 2:30 that day on Wednesday. The courts refused to let me file my motion challenging jurisdiction because they said that the judge, Patrick Diamond, had not yet signed the order releasing my attorney. I fired my attorney March 15th, and my attorney sent me an email on Monday letting me know that the judge had still not released him, and then my former attorney called me on Wednesday morning, told me he talked to the courts and reiterated that I had terminated him, and he told me that he wasn't planning on being at the hearing that day, and was that okay with me? And I said, yes, that was okay with me, because I wasn't planning on being at the hearing either. I was planning on filing my motion to dismiss or challenging jurisdiction. So the three court clerks are started being one clerk, and then they got a second one in there, and then there was three clerks, and they were all looking at their computer screen and whispering amongst the three of them, and they kept whispering about Judge Diamond. They kept saying Judge Diamond hadn't released my attorney yet. And Judge Diamond was dismissed from the case back in March, early March, before I even fired my attorney on March 15th. So there have been two judges assigned to the case since then. There was Judge Sarah Gruing, and then there was Judge Leonardo Castro. So they kept saying that they absolutely would not let me file my motion challenging jurisdiction. So so they finally told me if I didn't get into the hearing that they would issue a warrant for my arrest. So I went into the hearing, and the judge kept asking me I complained that that the courts hadn't released my attorney yet, who I dismissed on March 15th, and I asked them why they hadn't been doing their job, why Judge Diamond hadn't signed the order dismissing my attorney, and Judge Leonardo Castro asked me twice what I was trying to file in court, and I didn't want to answer him the first time, so I didn't answer him the first time, but he asked me a second time, and then I told him I was filing a motion to challenge jurisdiction, and he said, well, that won't be necessary because the case has been dismissed. And so I asked him when it was dismissed, and he said just at the start of the hearing that day. So at 2:30, it had been dismissed. At any rate, what should I have done that day on Wednesday when they refused to let me?
What you're saying is that court case now is over.
That court case now is over, but I spent about 3 weeks preparing for it, which my time could have been spent. And let me tell you this.
I understand.
Violation has been dismissed, but the fraudulent harassment restraining order has not been dismissed. There's still the fraudulent harassment restraining order, and they're prosecuting me in Wisconsin, in another state. So there's still, but the violation in May of 2022 has been dismissed. So just let me tell you a little bit more about Judge Diamond's before you. So I want to know what action I should take against Judge Diamond. So Judge Diamond has wrongfully denied me informal pauper status 8 or 9 times in the past two and a half years. He has not ruled on my most recent IFP application, which I filed on April 26th. And he failed to rule on my 3 emergency motions to dismiss the guardianship, which I filed in January. He just sits back and he doesn't rule. That's his little name of the game. So that's why he didn't dismiss my attorney either. So, I mean, he is single-handedly responsible for my husband being dead because he didn't rule on my 3 emergency motions in January. What can I do about Judge Diamond?
Did he file a warrant or anything on you?
No, not to my knowledge. But after the hearing,
stop, Stop. There's way too much here, and I'm trying to bring the simplicity and understanding it at the same time. So let me ask some simple questions, give me some simple answers, let's see where we go from there.
Okay, thanks.
This judge that you're talking about is in the other state, correct?
No. This is in Minnesota, where I live, where my home is. This is in Minnesota.
So
there is a judge in Wisconsin that is prosecuting me for violating the fraudulent harassment restriction. So they're prosecuting me in two different states.
For the same thing?
For the same harassment restraining order.
Okay.
Different dates.
Stop. Where did the restraining order come from, the other state or this state?
Minnesota. This state.
The other state or this state? This state. Okay. Okay, well, I wouldn't worry about the other state. You're not living there. They're not going to come out and try to extradite you. It'd be too silly for them to even try. And it has to become a federal case in order to deal with this at this point, I think. But in any event...
Well, they arrested me. That's why my husband was murdered. They arrested me at the hospital, and I couldn't go back there. So that's why they got my husband, and that's how they murdered him. So it's very serious,
Try to get past the problem you have, and then deal with it from a different perspective. Okay.
Okay.
You could deal with it with a lawsuit, but not now.
Okay.
Deal with the problem of getting away from this thing where they may try to put you in jail. Correct.
Yep.
Okay. So when's your next hearing?
That one has been. I don't have any next hearings, to my knowledge. For the Wisconsin violation,
but he dismissed.
I had a hearing.
I'm confused. Stop. I'm just totally confused. You did tell me before the case was dismissed. Okay, then you're telling me it wasn't dismissed. Then you told me that there's another state. Then there's two charges in two states. But the one state that you're in, there is no more. Is that the one you went to just the other day and they dismissed it?
Yeah.
They dismissed the violation. They haven't dismissed the harassment restraining order. They just dismissed the charge that I violated it in May of 2022. That's all they have dismissed is the alleged violation of the harassment restraining order. The harassment restraining order is still out there.
When is the next time you go on the court? There is no more dates?
There is no more dates.
Okay, but the restraining order is irrelevant at this point because your husband has passed.
No, it's not. No, it's not irrelevant. I cannot carry a firearm until it is dismissed. While there's a HRO against me,
okay.
I can't carry a firearm. Believe you me, I want to carry a firearm.
All right, that's another story now. But my point is this. You got to get past this point. And then you got to go back and take care of business from your perspective as the plaintiff. That's what you got to do. But until this stuff settles down, you don't want to do that at this moment because you've got a criminal thing in here. But you're saying that that's gone. You don't have to worry about that no more.
There's no more violations. There's only the one in Wisconsin.
Okay, so you're not in jeopardy of going to jail in the state you're living in.
No.
And my advice to you is to continue in the course and really get deep into it. I don't know how deep you're getting into it, but I tell people all, if you're not spending, when you go to college and to get a doctrine, you're spending day and night working on it to get to that point where you get to the end of your courses and your classes and you've worked everything out. You know, people that are putting in an hour a week or 2 hours a week, well, they got good knowledge, that's okay. But if they're going to want to be good in the courtroom and deal with the law, and potentially be a lawyer, then they really got to put the heavy time into it. You got to really start puzzling all these things together. But what I suggest to you is spend the next 6 months or so, or whatever it is, to work through this course and go through it diligently and make sure you understand everything and see how it all works and see how due process works from one point to the next. And then start puzzling your case. You got all the information you need on your case. Start creating your affidavit for your case. And maybe 6 months from now, you take it into court. You go after these people.
Okay, John, I let you talk. Now can I talk because you asked me a specific question and I answered the specific question. I don't have 6 months to do anything. I missed a deposition. These abusers have been appointed the whole estate. They've cremated my husband. They have got everything, and I missed a deposition. So I don't have a lawyer in Iowa. My husband had a will in Iowa, the valid will. I can't sit back and do anything for 6 months. I got to take action right now. I need to get a lawyer in Iowa, and I need to do I know I'm going to move the guardianship and conservatorship and the probate case in Minnesota. I'm moving them to federal court for cause. That's going to be my next highest priority. So,
but look, you don't have enough knowledge to really deal with this case. That's just the bottom line here. Not that you can't get enough knowledge, because you can, but I don't see you getting it in a week or two or a month. I just don't see that. Okay, it takes time to really start to absorb all this stuff. You know, I've spent 20 years actually, but let's say 15 years, day and night in this stuff, working through, doing lots and lots of research, pulling things together, getting court cases, creating footnotes, studying through Black's Law, and working out how the court system works, I'm reasonably well in court, I think, anyway. But the point is you're new to this, and you need to spend some time. You need to take some time. I don't see, unless you're going to hire a lawyer, like you say, that's one thing, because that's what you're going to have to do. But you're not going to get a lawyer to fight this case anyway. They're not going to go up against the system, because that's what you're doing. You're going up against the system. And the other thing is giving yourself more time to get educated and prepare for this case. Well, then at the other side of things, we may get to the point where you're on the other side of devolution, and that's a big step up for you now, because now you have the potential of justice, okay? So, again, I don't think you're ready or prepared to be able to do this.
Okay, can I, for the first 2 months, you told me to challenge jurisdiction. For 2 months, every week after week, you told me to write an affidavit and bring it to the sheriff, and that'll stop everything. Yeah. I still haven't done the affidavit. Well, so Eric is helping me. Eric is helping me with this stuff now.
Okay, so, well, you move to that part of the process and see where it goes. I wouldn't argue that, but you're out of jeopardy now. That's the key. Okay, that's the point. You're out of jeopardy, and you want to put yourself
the
back.
The estate is, them stealing the estate is not out of jeopardy. I absolutely have to take action now.
But I understand. So, Let's stop. Listen, I understand what you're saying. There's only two ways you could do this. Hire a lawyer, which you're going to lose with a lawyer, or work through the knowledge to have to really understand what you need to do and how to do it, give it some time, and then go for it to see if you can make this case work. The possibility is there. But I don't see any other choice on this. Now, the thing is I understand that who's spending your money or exhausting the estate? Is it other parts of the family, or is it the lawyers just eating it up?
The judge has given Irvin's son, Brian, the one who started this whole thing and put Irvin in a fraudulent guard, the judge has given Brian special administrator.
Okay.
Brian can do whatever he wants to.
I there's so much going on here. Again, I don't see you
and
doing
that's,
get knowledge.
That's in Minnesota. Irvin has a valid will in Iowa. The Minnesota will is from 1987.
I understand. You told me
years old.
Later will. Yeah, there's a will that comes up much later, and that's the most valid one, and that's what you need to deal with. But again, you either got to get a lawyer. Okay, for that part of the process to make that battle. That's a different battle now. You could make that battle with a lawyer, or you could do it yourself, but you don't have the knowledge to do it yourself. So that's a problem.
I'm going to get a lawyer for that, but we still, before we can proceed with the Iowa will, we need to get this one in Minnesota moved to federal court for cause. So can't Eric Eric has offered to help me, so can't Eric help me do that? Move the Minnesota guardianship and conservatorship and the Minnesota probate case to federal court for cause. Because that's what you told us last week.
Right. And again, you know, what was the cause we decided would be? Is it lack of due process?
Exactly. Absolutely. Lack of due process.
And not having jurisdiction.
Yep.
Okay. Because, see, I get confused here with these two state things. I'm very confused at this point on trying to separate the two cases. Okay. And So you're saying that the argument with the son is in one state, which is not the one you're in, but then there's the argument.
No, here. It is in.
It is.
I live in Minnesota. We all live in Minnesota. Irvin only fled to Iowa to escape the abuse and financial exploitation. Now that Irvin's dead, we all live in Minnesota.
Okay, well, I wouldn't worry about going into the other state. Just deal with the problem in your state. But I'll tell you what, it's going to be an uphill battle with a lawyer. I don't know, but
the will is in Iowa. We have to get a lawyer in Iowa.
Look, let me just say this. So you move it to federal court for cause. Fine. Now what? Now what do you do?
I don't know. I'm just trying to follow the instructions that you've given me.
No, I can't give you instructions to go step by step throughout your entire court case. I can only, when you're learning through what we're trying to teach here and getting everything out, and then you kind of run into a situation, you need a question to get an answer to get you past something, that's one thing. But to be able to give you the answers to go from this point, then what to do next, and then what to do next, and what to do next, and what to do next, I can't do that. I just can't. I don't have the time to do that. And, you know, you have to learn that yourself, and that's what's going to take your time. Now, the only other thing is that, you know, yeah, a lot of money is going to probably disappear, but I doubt all of it. But let's say a lot of it does. It is what it is. If you win the lawsuit, they're going to have to come up with that money, whatever assets they spent it on, and whatever they have left, and so on and so forth.
Now, these people are responsible for murder, John.
I understand.
I'm not going
to. That you have to go to the sheriff for. I told you that. There's only one way you could do that. You need to take the evidence to the sheriff, and there's nothing else you can do about that.
Okay, so this is my next question. I still do not understand, back to what you just said about taking the evidence to the sheriff. So can you explain again the purpose of my affidavit? I have a question. Is there only one affidavit, or should I draft multiple affidavits? Is there one affidavit for the sheriff saying that I have evidence of a crime, and is there another affidavit for moving the case to federal court for cause? Because Eric told me the purpose of my affidavit is to show that I have a real case and controversy, and I need to be repaired, restored, and remedied.
Right. That's one part of the case. But what you need to deal with the sheriff is just, again, you got to get the evidence and give it to the sheriff. And if your affidavit is part of that evidence and you make an affidavit and just tell the story on what is dealing with that crime, it has nothing to do with the court case, nothing at all. You're trying to report a crime. It's that simple. And the sheriff will look at it, and either he'll say he has enough evidence at least to start to do more of an investigation, or he doesn't see enough at all to really even start an investigation. Whatever it is he says, it's going to be, but you have to get whatever evidence you can get to show.
Okay.
You really
so think- then is there a different affidavit? Because I'm confused, because again, you said in my affidavit that I don't, you said you do not add law and you do not add evidence. So I don't know how to do it. An affidavit without evidence.
You're not listening. No. If you have an affidavit to add to that, then you give them an affidavit. If you're coming in as a witness to the crime and you're just one of many witnesses and whatever evidence you have, that's your affidavit for that purpose. If you're just bringing evidence on its own and you're not part of that evidence, then you bring that evidence on its own. if you got both, because you're a witness, plus there's other witnesses or there's other evidence, and you bring all that together and give it to the sheriff. It has nothing to do with the case. It has to do with murder. Now, once that gets established, and if they get a case going here for murder, now the whole case starts to change a little bit too on the other case.
I still don't understand how to do an affidavit. What do I put in my affidavit, and what don't I put in my affidavit?
An affidavit for the purpose of the sheriff, is that what you're talking about? What do you have to tell the sheriff?
Yes, exactly.
What did you see? What do you know?
All sorts of. This has been going on for 2.5 years. I know that my husband was being abused and financially exploited by all of his children. I know that he fled from Minnesota to Iowa. I know that he set up residency in Iowa. I know that we met with police. I know we met with his doctor. We met with social workers. We met with, he talked to legal aid. He's reported it multiple times. He's got in Safe at Home, which is the address confidentiality program, all because he was fleeing the abuse and financial exploitation of his children, his guardian, and a police detective by the name of Matthew DeBoer. We have evidence of that. We have videotape. We have documents that he signed.
Hold on a minute.
So what do I do with that? How do I put that into an affidavit form?
All right, look, you have to bring the evidence of the crime to the sheriff. If you have a story to add to it, you just give the facts. You tell a story. It's very simple. You just tell a story, and you don't be descriptive in things that are irrelevant to the story. The whole thing is focused on what you're trying to prove, is that the fact that there was a crime there. And any evidence that or any story that puts things together in your mind will be helpful along with the evidence. I don't know that you could be the witness that the crime took place. You may be able to bring together the story that suggests that the crime took place, and then you have to have the witnesses to prove that you can get an evidence to prove that the crime took place. Okay, you have to have all that. You bring it to the sheriff. It's that simple. Now, writing an affidavit is very simple. Go up and look at an affidavit on the course. There's a couple of affidavits in various places. The top is just starts the thing that, you know, it just says affidavit of your name, I'm competent, so on and so forth. My name is this. And then you tell your story. And at the bottom, you put a place for signature and a notary. It's everything is there. You just have to put the meat of the stuff in between.
I don't know how to word it. If Brian, his son, filed a motion putting Irvin in a guardianship, he filed everything in his motion was fraudulent. How do I put that in my affidavit? That Brian perjured himself?
All right, look, I have to just mute you so I can talk here. Look, that has nothing to do with the story. You know, the story is something focusing in on the fact that your husband was murdered. Now, you can set a stage around that story, but anything that's going on in the court, this, that, and it's irrelevant to the story. It has nothing to do with the story. Yeah, they took him to court to do this, but you don't want to get into those details. That has nothing to do with it. You have to get proof that individual, that your husband was murdered. That's what you got to get proof of. You got to find witnesses, and you got to get whatever evidence you can. And then you can give a little bit of a story around that. But first, you have to get all that together. Unless you could say, I saw them kill him. If you can't say that, then you're not a witness. Okay? What witnesses that you got to get? You know, I don't even know if you can prove it. So that's what you got to do. And then, you know, again, an affidavit is not necessary at this point in time until you pull all the evidence together and go talk to the sheriff. But then you do have to be prepared to give him sort of the cover story. But again, you start getting into all this stuff and what took place in the court and all this other stuff that has nothing to do with the crime. You're just going to build so much stuff, people are going to just get confused and you're not going to get anywhere. But you don't have the ability to do this at this point. Well, maybe you do. I don't know. It's because it's just evidence. It's not that you're going into the court to go through the court process.
John, when you said that it has nothing to do with it, it has 100% to do with it. Brian put his father in a guardianship. Once he's in a guardianship, they can do whatever the hell they want to with him, including murdering him. His guardian is the one who murdered him in hospice.
Okay.
So that's, you can't say it has nothing.
I have to mute you again because we're just going on and on. Look, that's where it began, and that's where you ended. So they took him into guardianship to steal his money. You don't need to say anything more at that point. The point is you got to prove the murder. That's what you got to prove. Okay? If you don't personally have eyewitness evidence of that, then your affidavit doesn't mean anything. Of course, yes, what was that? That's the motive is what you're talking about, to steal his estate. That's the motive. You can give him the motive, okay? Now you got to get the evidence, and that's what you got to work on. I don't know why you keep going back to this over and over and over again. You don't have to tell that whole story to the sheriff. Okay, you just have to say that was given the basic information, that was the motive to steal his property, and he fled to Ohio. You don't have to go much more than that. Okay, then everything, now you got to get the evidence of his murder. That's the difficult part. Do you have evidence that he was murdered?
John.
390.32.
There's a statute, Minnesota statute, 390.32 in Minnesota. They're not supposed to cremate a body if they're died under suspicious circumstances. The judge, I had a signed letter from the Cremation Society promising they would not cremate my husband's body. And then Irvin's children told the judge a bunch of lies without any proof whatsoever. His children told the judge that I kidnapped Irvin, I killed him by malnutrition. So the judge put a restraining order against me, preventing me from burying my husband, and he appointed Brian the special administrator, and he allowed Brian to cremate my husband's body. So the evidence, that's against state law. He violated state law.
Then that's the only thing you go after them for, is the violation of state law, and you can sue for that. But you can, if your evidence is in the body, and the body has been cremated, you don't have no evidence. You can't go to the sheriff. There's nothing you can do about that. Now you have a different crime, and that's the crime. That's what you got to deal with. Now here's the problem. Here's the problem that you have. Okay, if there's a sheriff in your county, hopefully there is. And you went to talk with him to tell him about that, I'm going to tell you exactly what the sheriff's going to tell you. Even if he sees that you're right, and he's going to say, well, I'm going to have to bring this to the district attorney. Because the district attorney has taken control of the sheriff's job, and he's the one that approves what goes before a grand jury and what doesn't. You understand the problem? And that's not going to change until you get to the other side of devolution. So there's,
okay, my husband was kidnapped out of the hospital.
Okay, did you hear
after
what
I was wrong?
Did you hear what I just
he
said?
He was taken against his will. He was transferred across state lines.
Can you prove?
There's no way.
Kathy, listen, there are two other people in the queue also, and it's getting late, and we spent a lot of time, but you're not really getting what I'm trying to tell you. You go for murder, now you're going for something else, and we've spoke about this something else before. You got to prove all this. Do you have evidence to prove all this stuff? Not a story.
I have evidence to prove that my husband did not go willingly with his guardian. Yes, I do. They kidnapped him.
Whoa. Now, you're saying guardian. The judge made a guardian. And did the son go request the guardian? I mean, how did the guardian come into play?
That's what I've been telling you all along. The son filed this fraudulent, perjured himself in his petition, and that's how the judge put him in the fraudulent guardianship, involuntary guardianship, yes. So when you kept saying it has nothing to do with it, it has everything to do with it.
But
he was under a guardianship in Minnesota.
Has nothing to do with the sheriff.
A fraudulent, involuntary one.
it has nothing to do with going to see the sheriff about murder, because you can't prove that no more. So you have to go a different route, and that's where you got to go. And I'm telling you right now, you're not capable of doing it, and you're going to have to study to be able to do this. You could do this at a later time, but I don't see you doing it now. I don't see you getting a lawyer to take this case on. There's not going to be anything where they're going to, you know, take this on for free, and you're going to have to pay for that lawyer. So that's your options, okay? The only option you have, other than if you can't pay for the lawyer, the only option you have is get educated and gather all your evidence together and learn what kind of law you can go after them for, how they violated it, and put it all together and keep putting all the pieces together as you're going through the course. And at some point in time, when you feel confident, that's when you go forward with it. Until then, there's nothing you could do.
Can I not challenge jurisdiction? Can I not move this case to federal court? You've been telling me and telling me and telling me and telling me.
That yes, you could do that. You could do that. But the problem is once you get there, now what? What do you do? How do you argue it? How do you move the case? What motions do you make? What are you looking for? What do you do? How do you go forward with if you're going to have to go through a discovery?
I have found a lawyer that I think can do that.
All right. Well, then you should talk to the lawyer about it.
I will be talking to the lawyer about it.
But
I'm simply trying to.
This is very
move this case.
Jen.
It is. Can Eric not help me challenge jurisdiction and move it to federal case for cause?
Well, you could do that, but then you got to know what to do once you're there before the judge. You have to know your argument,
yep.
What their arguments are going to be, and you have to be ready, and you have to be able to deal with the paperwork. And if you could do that, fine. I mean, you can't keep coming to me for every step of the way to walk you through a case. Lots of people would like to do that. I don't even have enough time. Look, I spend 2 hours a week so I can talk to people and give them whatever thoughts I can. But they have to learn the law in order to be able to execute some things that I give them. The other thing is I spend 3 to 4 hours a week in the course itself. And in between the week, I spend time preparing for the course of the following week and so on and so forth, plus my other work. I mean, I don't have time to run people's cases. And I've got a few cases of my own that I'm working on. And they suffer. You know, because I have to deal with really what goes on with the National Liberty Alliance first. So I have cases that suffer from that. But that is what it is. You can't move a case to federal court for cause and not understand the court you're going into, the structure of the court, how things work, what's the next step. You need to know what the facts are. What are they gonna say? What's their position? What are they thinking? This is all the stuff you have to gather together and be ready, because anything they bring up, you need to respond with an answer. And if you get caught without a good answer, and it could throw the whole case right out. You know, it's not just a matter of writing a paper. It's more than that. You have to defend it.
Can I ask you what I can do about Judge Diamond, who has denied me informal pauper status 8 or 9 times, and he hasn't ruled on the most recent one that I filed on May 26th? Because I need to get the court file, and it'll cost me over $2,000 if I have to pay for the file. So what can I do about him refusing to rule on my informal pauper's application? Because the other judge ruled, and the other judge in probate court.
I'm going to give you the advice that I do give a lot of people to, because there's so many things going on here. There's so many uphill battles to make. There's so much knowledge you need to make all of these uphill battles. And even with the knowledge, you're probably not going to succeed, because these people are crooked. They don't obey their own rules. They don't obey the law. They're lawless. Okay? So no matter what you do, it's going to be an uphill battle, and you're probably going to lose. And you don't have the knowledge. For that alone, you're going to lose. The only thing you could do is gain knowledge. And I'll tell you what, with your case, I wouldn't do much of anything until I got to the other side of devolution. That's my opinion. I got a case myself that I just set aside. I'm not gonna push no further, and I'm waiting to get onto the other side of devolution. When I get over there, I'm going for that case back again. But that's
so you don't have an answer on what I can do to the judge who won't rule on my IFP application then. You don't have an answer for me?
Look, at the bottom line is they can't charge you for justice. That's the bottom line. Okay, are they going to obey that? Are they going to obey the fact that, look, at we the people paid for this building, we pay your salaries, we pay for all of the machines in here, we pay for all of the secretaries, all of the legal the legal people, we pay for the law, we pay for everything. And now you're telling me you want
to... I just want him to rule.
Listen to me.
I just want him to rule. Does he not have to rule, deny, or accept?
We'll see if he'll deny it or accept it then. Just go in and see what he's going to do. But he's probably going to deny it.
I filed it in May 26th, and he has not ruled yet.
Well, that answers your question.
The other judge
doesn't want to rule on that.
Can he do that?
Kathy, please, please, listen. If you go and push him and say, look, I want you to rule on this thing, he's probably going to rule against you. I don't know why he's waiting. There could be a number of reasons why he's waiting.
He can't rule against me. Okay. He absolutely cannot rule against me.
Every time I talk to you, I get a little more information, a little more information. I don't even have it all. And I don't understand what the situation is between you and that judge. There's too many judges involved. There's too many situations. There's two states. There's family involved. There's so many things going on in this case. So many. And you need to understand every facet of it if you think you're going to try to win the case. And then after you think about it, you have to have the common sense to put it all together and say, okay, I got the whole picture together, and I can see it. Can I win this case? And then you have to be honest with yourself, because if the answer is no, you got to walk away from it. That may be hard to do, but maybe the answer would be yes. But you're not going to know until you get it all together. You got to get your mind together. You got to get your legal mind together. You got to get all the case together and puzzle all the pieces together. You got to puzzle what you think their strategies are, what you know their strategies are. You got to puzzle together answers for those strategies, destroy them in court. There's a lot to do in a case. It's not as simple as just writing a paper and moving it to federal court for cause.
I'm asking one simple question, John.
Kathy, we've got three more people. Yeah. We've got three more people in line in just over 10 minutes. You've asked a lot of questions, but look, we got to get going.
Let me just finalize the thing here. Listen, with that judge, okay, you can go push him for a conclusion on that and see what he does. If he sits on it, there's nothing you can do about it, because you're not going to get no justice on this side of devolution. And if it's negative against you, you're not going to win this battle. Not on this side of devolution. They don't care. And you already know that because of what they've done. You already know all that. So, again, me, I say go get knowledge. And, you know, there's a time when you got to walk away from something for a while. You can come back, but you got to walk away from something for a while, and you got to get knowledge. You got to pull yourself together, get everything, all your ducks in order, figure it out, and when you're ready, then you go to battle. But until you can count your forces and understand that you can win that battle, you shouldn't go forward. You know, people ask all the time and for this or that or the other thing, and I see they don't have enough knowledge to be able to go into the courts and make these battles. They just don't. They think they know certain things, and they don't. They don't know due process. They really don't. They think that the judge can't make any decisions. That's nothing further from the truth. The judge can make some decisions, and he needs to be making decisions, but he's got to make the right decisions. He's got to make decisions under American jurisprudence, according to the law. But they don't do that because they won't do that. They're lawless. So that's all I could tell you on that. Anyway, we got to go to the next person, and, I think you really need to learn more before you go forward.
I don't think that I'm going to learn more if you can't even answer me what can I do about a judge who doesn't rule on my IFP application. There's nothing that I can do.
All right, I already.
And I've been trying to find the answer out.
Well, I told you what to do. Go call the judge up, ask him if you'd like to come in and see him, and ask him when you see him, can you just rule on this case?
Sorry, but I don't have the judge's phone number. I can't just call the judge up.
You call the clerk. You make an appointment with his clerk. All judges have clerks, and they'll make an appointment. You can see
sure.
him time you want. Or you can make it, he may say, well, you know, I'll make a phone call.
I appreciate that advice.
Just call up and say, rule on this, please. Get this over with so I know where I got to go. That's all.
Okay, I'll try that. Thank you. I'll do that.
All right, thank you. All right, Walt, New York, you got the mic.
Yes, hello, John. This is Walt. And I'm really not in New York. It's a New York phone number. I'm in Jacksonville right now, Florida, the biggest landmass state in the nation, lower 50, 48.
A fake phone caller, huh? A fake phone caller, huh?
Yes. When you started the program tonight, you were talking about a sore throat. And I want to tell you something. There are two natural remedies that will take that right out. And you can get it real quick. There's a place called Lori's Health Foods in Rochester, New York. You call them up tomorrow morning, they'll ship it to you. You have it. If you call tomorrow, Tuesday, you probably have it by Friday. And here's the name of the two remedies, if you don't know about it. Did you ever hear of oregano oil?
Yeah.
You use that. They sell you 1 or 2 ounce bottles with an eyedropper. You put 1 or 2 drops under your tongue. You want to run to the water cooler and spit it. It's so bad. But I tell you what, it starts working immediately. It's one of the strongest antibiotics known, naturally. The second item is this. They have that at Lori's. You just call them. You say, I want to order something through the mail. They'll send it right to you. And because you're so close, you'll have it, like, say, maybe Wednesday. And the other item is, did you ever hear of colloidal silver?
Yeah, I started that treatment this morning, and I think it helped a little bit.
The way you do it, I don't know what they told you.
Well, what I did, look at, I was aware, you know, here's the problem. When you get sick, and really sick, you really need a nurse. And if you don't have someone to really, you know, get on top of you, make your medicine at the right time, and push you to do all the right things, you just never get to it. And with all the work that I have, and
yes.
When I leave this chair here, I go right to bed because I'm that sick. But the thing is this morning I did start the oregano. I put it into colloidal silver, not the colloidal, but the silver, what do they call it, the sovereign silver.
Colloidal silver. You don't do it together. You do it separately.
Well, what I do is I put it into a nebulizer, okay? And so I take it through a nebulizer, and then I took 7 drops of MMS in a capsule. I took that. And then I took 6 drops of MMS and made a little bit of water to gargle with. And that has done some relief. It's backed off a lot of cough. I feel a little better, but I still have that cough.
All right, now, yeah? You say you took 6 drops of what? Now, you mean talk about the oregano oil?
Oh, no, I took 6 drops of MMS. I don't know if you're familiar with MMS.
Okay, I'm just saying this. If you use one or two or 3 drops of oregano oil under your tongue.
I did that too. Yeah, well, I did that. I did that through, the nebulizer. But I probably should take a few drops in a capsule and swallow it. You know, maybe that.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not talking about a nebulizer. Just you. This is what I use, and all the people I know get better quick. You put 2 or 3 drops of oregano oil on a spoon, put it under your tongue, and hold it as long as you can before you have to spit it out. It's very powerful. And that acts immediately. It's one of the strongest. And the other one, the colloidal silver you took this morning, you take a quarter of a teaspoon of that, you put it in your mouth, you swish it around for 30 seconds, and you swallow that. But you don't swallow the oregano oil. You spit that out. So those you do that like you see the colloidal silver in the morning. Noontime, you take the oregano oil, and you do them both twice a day, and I would say in 2-3 days, that sore throat is going to be gone. I'm not talking about nebulizers. Put it right in your mouth, these treatments, John, and you can get that. So if you get that, is it 100%? Are you getting the real good stuff?
Well, yeah, I got the Mediterranean 100% oregano oil. Yeah, I'll try that under the tongue. I've never done that before.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Here's what happened to my daughter real quick. They didn't believe me when I said this stuff works, and she had a problem. She just took 2 drops under her tongue. She held it for 30 seconds, had to run to the bathroom and spit it out. It was so powerful. But then she said this. 5 minutes later, all her sinuses were gone. 5 minutes. She couldn't believe it. So if you can't hold it under, just hold as long as you can. If you can hold it a minute, that's good, or 2 minutes. As you get more and more saliva in your mouth, it gets easier to hold. But you don't want to swallow it because it can be irritating to your stomach. That's the oregano oil. So you used to do that every day, use the colloidal silver at a different time of the day. Both of those treatments, John, I think the Almighty's going to bless you by using his herbs. You're going to be well.
All right, well, I'll give it a try. I've been using it, but I'll try it the way that you're saying.
Maybe. Also, now, too, if you want, I'll give you that phone number. Lori's, if you ever want anything mail order, because you live in Poughkeepsie, how many miles are you from Rochester?
I'm quite a bit. I'm probably 2.5, 3. I'm probably at least 3 hours drive from Rochester.
Okay, but it's probably be no more than 2 days when they send priority mail, right?
Yeah. Well, what are you looking that I should buy?
Well, as I'm saying, okay. If you call Lori's, the mail order, they'll get you right on there. Glue it in the morning. and you tell them who you are, and you want it mailed to where you are, your address. You want that colloidal silver, they'll have it for you.
I've got that. I've also got a silver maker, a colloidal.
Well, I'm just saying, in the future, if you want anything you could think of, they got it over at Lori's, and they'll ship it to you. If you're a senior, they give you a 10% discount for anything like that, and also it's only $4.99 for shipping. You'll get it in 2 days, anytime in the future, whatever you need.
All right, I appreciate that. I'll check that out.
So then you have to drive all over the place. Just call them. You want the phone number? I'll give it to you right now.
Well, I don't need it right now because I got silver right now, and I just ordered one from Amazon, and the only reason I ordered it because I ran out of it. I make my own silver. I got the.
All machine. Right. And if you ever want to look it up, it's Lori's Health Foods in Rochester. They're probably the best mail order that I've ever seen. They're very good.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank
okay,
you.
Good night, and I'll talk to you another time. Good night.
Okay, thanks, Walt. Yep. Okay, Matt, you got the mic. Go right ahead. What state you from?
Yeah, from New Mexico.
Okay, Matt, go right ahead.
Yeah, so I actually found you guys. I read the book. It's called Common Law Handbook. And I thought that was an excellent book, so that was how I kind of got introduced to National Liberty Alliance.
Okay.
Yeah, just like when
we've got about 7 or 8 handbooks out there, and we also a lot of them are free. You can download them PDF on our website. Unless you want the handbook to go in your pocket, then you go up to Amazon. You can click off of Amazon. We've got a whole bunch of books up there.
Yeah, I'm kind of a like book in your hand type of person. So, anyways, I read this one. I took some notes, and I got like the little sticky notes all over it. I mean, it's really good. About like the and jurisprudence, some of the Supreme Court cases, and I can't even remember how I found it, but I was learning through another gentleman who had already passed away, I guess, years ago. His name's Carl Miller. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Carl Miller.
Yeah.
When did he pass away? I didn't know he passed. When did he pass?
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know for sure, but just kind of, trying to find information on him, I think it was 2014, 15-ish.
Yeah, it's been a while since because I've seen his videos, and that's how I know.
I think
he was called the Constitutional Man.
Exactly. Yeah, there's like a 5-hour video on YouTube that I've listened to, and I've played it maybe like 3, 4, 5 times because it's just
We may even have that up on our website. I'm very familiar with Carl Miller. I've seen lots of his videos, and we probably have some of his videos up on our website somewhere.
Yeah, and he emphasizes basically, acting as your own attorney, obviously after ample knowledge of just the Constitution and applying Supreme Court cases. And earlier in the call, there was a gentleman talking about the driver's license. License plate issue, and it's a pretty hot issue, it sounds like, with a lot of people, and I didn't really get to hear the whole thing about it, and it seems like maybe a lot of people don't know how to argue it in a court. Not that I'm like Mr. Expert, but I have tried to really learn a lot from him, and then your common law handbook here kind of emphasizes a lot of his main points. But just like really quick, his argument was that essentially the Supreme Court has established that traveling is a fundamental right, and it's so fundamental that it doesn't have to be mentioned in the Constitution. And I believe it's Shapiro versus Thompson that establishes the right to travel. And basically what they did is they converted your guaranteed liberty into a privilege and issued a license and a fee for it. And Murdoch versus Pennsylvania says you can't do that. And then if they do it, Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham says that you can ignore the license and a fee and engage in the right with impunity. And so basically the Supreme Court established the license and fee as unconstitutional law. So any law that is against the Constitution.
We're familiar with all that. The problem is they don't care.
So do you think that is, like, arguable in court? Like, if you can kind of...
No, you're not going to get nowhere. No, you're not going to get anywhere with it. We've tried, believe me. But there is a way to deal with these people. First of all, I would never drive without a license because I just don't have time to spend in jail. If you have time to spend in jail and you want to do that, that's fine. Second of all, you definitely want to have insurance, and the same thing with a registered vehicle and license plates. Again, you know, look, we don't have much of a choice unless you don't mind spending a lot of time in jail. You know, you're going to get beat up pretty bad, and ultimately you're not going to win anyway. They're lawless. They do whatever they please. They don't want to hear what you have to say. But there are ways to deal with the problem, okay? And that is you just challenge the jurisdiction because they don't have it. They have to prove jurisdiction. And when they give you a hard time, you move it to federal court for cause. Now, again, with all that said, you still have to understand how due process works. And that's where a lot of people fail. They don't know how the court system works. They don't know the structures. They don't know what you can take into federal court and what you can't. And again, the key word, the key to that is for cause. What cause? It has to be a constitutional cause, okay? A violation of your right of due process is cause. Don't have jurisdiction, and so therefore they're hijacking you into jurisdictions unknown. That's cause. That's how you beat them.
Yeah, and, you know, he emphasized a lot of that, too.
And the last thing you do is argue with a cop. You're not going to get anywhere. Cop has no clue.
I agree.
Has no clue on what's going on. They don't know. Look, I'm very polite. I give him my license. I even thank him for the ticket. I'm just not going to bother with the cop. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Yep, I agree with that.
I fight with the judge, and I only go in once. The judge has one. I have papers. I file a paper challenging the jurisdiction, and I make sure my papers get to court before I do, and they ignore it. They'll send it back or whatever, then you go into court, and you let it out. Did you get my paper? No, I didn't get your paper. I says, I know you didn't because I got it back right here, you know. The clerk sent it back. And by the way, the law says it's 2 years in jail and a fine. I think it's two. It could be 1 year. But it's 2 years in jail and a fine. Not that I'm pushing that, Judge. I mean, that's what I would say in the courts. I just had a case where I won under that kind of a condition where I challenged jurisdiction. I held I held myself dead. I was it. We're not doing anything. I told them when I leave here, we're going to federal court because I'm moving into federal court to cause. They did let me go. Usually what I do is over the years, I don't get a lot of tickets anyway, but when I get a ticket, I send in a paper, challenge jurisdiction, denying the jurisdiction, challenge it, and then never hear back from maybe half the time. The other half I do hear back from, I just paid a ticket because I don't even have time to go to court. Okay, but the last time I went and I challenged it. And I worked with a lot of people challenging and trying to battle them. I remember one case with a friend who was trying to win in the court. And every month you got to go back, another month to go back. It's constant, and you're not getting anywhere. But, of course, we're going through the school of hard knocks trying to figure things out, listening to a lot of things online, too. But I started to get traction when I really buckled down to learn how the court system works. What is due process? How does due process work? Once you know that, then you can get them on jurisdiction alone. Because if they don't have jurisdiction, they can't hear the case. They don't have it, period.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I know it's small, like you're saying, the driver's license and whatnot. It really is inconvenient. But at the same time, right, you got to, I think we all can agree that tyranny comes in the guise of convenience. And they kind of get us with these little things, you know, little by little.
You're absolutely right on that. But the problem is, this has been going on for so long. I mean, you know, it's not like it's just beginning and let's battle them, let's deny, let's argue. They got all the guns. It's been going on so long. So some things you got to live with. You got to live with your birth certificate. You got to live with how you can go about getting a bank account. You got to live with having a driver's license. You got to live with having a car registered and plated. You know, I mean, you got to live with all these things because you were born into it, as a matter of fact. So now we got to get out of it. We will get out of it. But we have to pick our battles, otherwise you spend a lot of time in jail.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm taking a lot of the courses online and I plan on completing as many as I can. And I'm here in Bernalillo County in Albuquerque, and I don't think there is a committee of safety here. And my initial intention was just to kind of start some sort of meetup group just to kind of study the Constitution and, you know, just like Supreme Court law or Supreme Court cases.
Well, go to a meetup group and bring up the issue of doing a committee of safety. Are you able to see my desktop here?
Yes.
Okay, well, here's the handbooks that we have up online. You know, you can buy them on Amazon.
Yeah, I got books.
What's available now. And I got two other books that I've written, Government by Consent and Court Access to Common Law. So those are books. But a lot of this stuff, if you go to start a committee of safety, you come down to handbooks, videos, and tools. You can get a lot of all those handbooks you can get here, download in PDF form. And also, you can download the Committee of Safety, Organizing the Committee of Safety, Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook right there. You can download that. That's how you can start the process. And go to a meetup. That's a good place to start. And talk. Bring your handbooks to the meetup and talk to people about it. See if people are interested in starting a Committee of Safety.
Yeah.
We also have a course. I don't know if you're familiar. We have a course going on called Court Access and the Common Law. Right here, and these courses are videotaped, so we're recording. So if you want to take that course, that's one. And this will teach you due process and everything, and you'll understand how the courts work.
Yeah, and I definitely plan on taking all that.
And the common law, of course, because we're looking at it from the perspective of the common law.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good information on the website. It's densely packed, so I'm just trying to kind of go at it one bite at a time, you know?
All right. Well, I appreciate that. It's we're after 11. I got to get out of here, and I'm still going to take a break.
Well, yep, I appreciate the info, too. So you guys have a good night.
Okay, thanks, Matt. All right, thanks, everyone, for coming.
John, real quick, let me ask you, speaking about devolution, have you seen the footage of the military movements in various cities across the country the past couple of days?
No, I haven't. Send me some info on that.
Okay, I will. I'll send you one from
Rob. Skype, you know? And I'll take a look. Where are these videos coming from? Who puts the videos out?
Hal Turner? I saw it from Derek Johnson. He posted some stuff, and then Hal Turner as well. Ron Flick sent me a Hal Turner video. I'll put it in your Skype.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you next week, hopefully, on Saturday's call. Bye.